Is VOA News. I'm Steve Miller. Sri Lanka's president gave the military sweeping police power starting Tuesday in the wake of the Easter bombings that killed nearly 300 people, while officials disclosed that intelligence agencies had warned weeks ago of the possibility of an attack by radical Muslim groups that were blamed for the bloodshed. VOA's Michael Brown has more.
Sri Lanka's prime minister said he feared the massacre could unleash instability, and he vowed to vest all necessary powers with the defense forces to act against those responsible. In addition, three unexploded bombs blew up Monday inside a van parked near one of the stricken churches as police were trying to defuse them. No injuries were reported. The government blocked access to social media, creating confusion and doing little to reassure residents and visitors that the danger had passed. Michael Brown, VOA News.
Five nations will be given until May 2nd to stop importing Iranian oil. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced that Washington was ending a waiver on the practice.
Any nation or entity interacting with Iran should do its diligence and err on the side of caution. The risks are simply not going to be worth the benefits. I want to emphasize that we have used the highest possible care in our decision to ensure market stability. The United States has been in constant discussion with allies and partners to help them transition away from Iranian crude to other alternatives.
In response to the U.S. announcement, Iran on Monday threatened to block the Strait of Hormuz, a strategically important choke point, if it is prevented from using it. North Korea confirmed on Tuesday that leader Kim Jong-un will soon visit Russia to meet with President Vladimir Putin. There are some indications the meeting will be held this week in far eastern port of Vladivostok, not too far from Russia's border with the north. This is VOA News. A House chairman on Monday subpoenaed former White House counsel Don McGahn as Democratic leaders moved to deepen their investigation of President Donald Trump while bottling up talk among their rank and file of impeaching him. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi urged divided Democrats to focus on fact-finding rather than the prospect of any impeachment proceedings after the damning details of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. Tensions are rising between Sudan's military and protesters who have held a week-long sit-in around army headquarters in Khartoum. As Naba Mohideen reports, the protesters have vowed to stay until the country returns to civilian rule.
The military council, which replaced ousted former President Omar al-Bashir on April 11, is under pressure to return civilian rule after announcing a two-year transition period. Despite the removal of Bashir, protesters note the military council includes allies of the longtime president. They question the military's intentions and refuse to end their 4 months of demonstrations until the country is under civilian leadership. Sudan's protests began in December because of fuel and food shortages, but quickly morphed into demands for Bashir to step down. Naba Mohideen for VOA News, Khartoum.
Officials say rescuers have found more bodies overnight in the rubble of a supermarket that crashed down in a powerful earthquake that damaged buildings and an airport in the northern Philippines. The death toll is now 11, and 24 people remain missing. Rescuers used cranes, crowbars, and sniffer dogs to look for people in the rubble, some of whom were yelling for help. Elon Musk says Tesla plans to start turning out self-driving vehicles next year and to take on Uber and other ride-hailing services. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
In a bold two-and-a-half-hour presentation at company headquarters Monday, CEO Elon Musk told investors and analysts Tesla expects to start converting the company's electric cars into fully self-driving vehicles from April to June next year. Musk also laid out a plan to take on Uber, Lyft, and other ride-hailing providers, in part by converting all currently leased Teslas into robo-taxis upon their return. Before any fully self-driving Teslas can hit the road, the company will need to get regulatory approval. Meantime, analysts polled by FactSet are predicting Tesla will report a $305 million first quarter net loss this week. I'm Mike Rossio.
Myanmar's top court on Tuesday rejected the appeal of two Reuters reporters sentenced to 7 years in jail for breaking the Official Secrets Act in a landmark case that has raised questions about the country's transition to democracy. Wallon and Jasau were awarded the Pulitzer Prize for their reporting on the Rohingya crisis earlier this month. From Washington, I'm Steve Miller. VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda parliamentarian Bobi Wine will deliver a letter today to the police against police brutality.
We have now decided to resort to another lawful avenue, and that is to protest against these injustices. We are invoking Article 29 of the Constitution, which guarantees every citizen the right to assemble and demonstrate.
Meanwhile, Uganda's main opposition FDC party has condemned the use of state institutions to harass critics. Sudan's military warns protesters to clear barricades amid breakdown of talks. And a vocal critic of Liberian President George Weah remains defiant even after meeting face-to-face with the president.
My going there does not suggest that I'm not going to talk about critical national issues. No, I want to make this clear. The president would not stop me from talking about critical national issues because I was elected to advocate for the Liberian people.
Yeka Koluba is a member of the Liberian House of Representatives. Measles are making a comeback globally and the state of migrants in the Mediterranean. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda parliamentarian and popular musician Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobi Wine, will deliver a letter today, Tuesday, to the Ugandan police against police brutality. The police canceled Bobi Wine's Easter holiday concerts on Sunday on the grounds that the concert organizers failed to meet public safety and security standards. Bobi Wine told a news conference yesterday that he had written to the police 3 months ahead of the concert for permission to hold the concert. Ugandan police have blocked 124 Bobi Wine concerts since October 2017. Bobi Wine told the news conference that the police were acting on the orders of President Yoweri Museveni.
Every citizen of Uganda knows President Museveni is ordering the police to block my concerts because he does not like what I sing. He wanted me to be like some other artist to be singing his praises. And when I refused, he resolved that he will not allow me to perform anywhere in Uganda. And being the coward that he is, his government has even proposed to bring regulations on artists to block me from even performing from outside the country without his or his government's clearance.
Bobi Wine said canceling his concerts will not silence him. He vowed to protest what he calls the brutality of Ugandan police.
The citizens have always been watching all these injustices and they've been asking, what next?
What next?
What next?
As I've always been trying to explain, that we have resorted to all lawful avenues to deal with these illegalities, but without success. So we have now decided to resort to another lawful avenue, and that is to protest against these injustices. We are invoking Article 29 of the Constitution, which guarantees every citizen the right to assemble and demonstrate. We are going to do this peacefully and unarmed. Yes, I am serious. We are going to demonstrate against the police misuse of authority, and indeed, we want the return of the rule of law. We want police to respect the laws of this country, and I'm personally going to take that letter to the police. I will use public means, or I will even walk there.
When?
I am taking that letter to the police tomorrow. Encourage other people that have been victims of this injustice, brutality, and all these evils, mainly led by the Uganda police, to write to the police and bring the letter. Be men and don't fear.
Uganda parliamentarian and popular musician Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobi Wine, he spoke Monday at a news conference in Kampala. Uganda's main opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change, has condemned what it says is the use of state institutions like the police to harass critics. The party's remarks came after popular musician and parliamentarian Bobi Wine's concert was cancelled by the authorities. The parliamentarian was subsequently detained on his way to his originally scheduled Easter Monday musical event. Meanwhile, President Yoweri Museveni has warned that he will not tolerate music shows that are used for political purposes. But opponents said the president's statement is an attempt to violate the constitution, which guarantees freedom of expression. Patrick Oboy Amurayet is leader of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change.
The FDC, first of all, regrets that this kind of political persecution on members of the opposition has got to a level where they are even stopped from carrying out activities related to their some form of employment and managing activity. Of course, the arrest of Mr. Bobi Wine this morning while going to perform in a concert is regrettable, and as the FDC negates the energy in the struggle. Now, we have already made calls for his release, just as our colleagues, the other political leaders have done, and as I understand now, he was taken back to his home, and I do not know whether his movements are not curtailed, but so I understand that he might have been released and taken back to his home.
President Museveni said he will no longer tolerate music shows that are tinged with politics, which some assume is what Bobi Wine engages in, because his supporters who come to cheer him on are political, they said, and this risks the country's stability. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think really the dilemma that Mr. Museveni is in is that there's a very thin line between music and politics. Over the centuries, music has been used for conveying political messages, and I don't see why Mr. Bobi Wine's case should be a unique case. And so really the question is, who determines whether Bobi Wine, who has not even sung in a concert, would be indulging in politics or merely entertaining his fans, or, you know, both?
I understand some of the concerns you are expressing, but there are laws governing meeting in public places where the government sometimes find it quite objectionable, because opposition forces, including yours, tend to flout these rules with impunity. Don't you think that if everybody would flout the law, then Uganda becomes a lawless society?
I'm sure that the laws that are being referred to by those friends of ours is the Public Order Management Act and the Penal Code Act. And I want to firmly state that we have not in any instance fail to adhere to these two legal provisions. What is happening in our country today is impunity of the highest order, where the authorities, the law does not matter. They would choose to read it whichever way they want to read it and interpret it in order to suit their interests. And so for us, we are left with no solution but to continue to fight even the same laws that are now being misread to cause a clampdown on the opposition in this country.
Patrick Oboy Amurayet is the leader of Uganda's main opposition FDC party. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotte from the capital, Kampala. Tensions are rising between Sudan's military and protesters who have held a week-long sit-in around army headquarters in Khartoum. As Namba Mohideen reports, the protesters have vowed to stay until the country returns to civilian rule.
Sudan's Transitional Military Council on Monday warned protesters it plans to clear the streets around the defense ministry. Meanwhile, protesters called for an even bigger demonstration, raising the risk of confrontation. After weekend talks with protest leaders broke down, the military council issued a statement calling for barricades around the sit-in, which started April 6, to be immediately removed. The group leading the protest, the Sudanese Professionals Association, suspended talks with the military Sunday because it refused the SPA's demand to permanently hand power to a civilian council. SPA member Faisal Saleh says the protesters had already made a list of civilian leaders they wanted.
عقدوه بالأمس مع اللجنة السياسية بالمجلس العسكري.
But at the meeting with the Transitional Military Council Saturday, he says the situation was deadlocked, so they decided to postpone the announcement of the names and suspended talks with the Military Council, says Saleh. The Military Council, which replaced ousted former President Omar al-Bashir on April 11, is under pressure to return civilian rule after announcing a two-year transition period. Despite the removal of Bashir, protesters note the Military Council includes allies of the longtime president. They question the military's intentions and refuse to end their 4 months of demonstrations until the country is under civilian leadership. Protester Adam Yassin says he was actually expecting those steps from the Military Council, as long as it includes groups loyal to the former regime with the same ideology. Political analyst Al-Fatih Mahmoud says deadlock is expected after 30 years under Bashir. He says he expects new horizons to be unlocked in front of the young protesters. Political powers will try to form themselves and find a way to express the will of the Sudanese people. Sudan's protest began in December because of fuel and food shortages, but quickly morphed into demands for Bashir to step down. A military coup finally removed him 11 days ago. Sudan's military authorities said Bashir was moved last week to a federal prison, and many of his loyalists were detained or replaced. Naba Muhyiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. In Liberia, a member of the House of Representatives and a critic of President George Weah met face-to-face yesterday with the president. Representative Yeka Koluba had been summoned to the Justice Ministry Monday to discuss rising tensions in the country after he had said that President Weah might be impeached within 3 months. Representative Koluba says meeting with the president will not stop him from talking about critical national issues because he was elected to advocate on behalf of the Liberian people.
Firstly, I want you to understand that the president asked me for an audience through my colleagues, the Independent Legislative Caucus in the legislature. So they asked me to go along with them. The president wanted to see me. So I went there, sat with the president, met him, and told him, thank you for the audience. Thank you for the invite. But I am bereaved. You know, one of our colleagues, Elon Lauren, is dead. Told him, Mr. President, I don't have any personal thing against you. All we're talking about is about national issues. But I will be ready to talk when I bury my brother. He said, fine, when you bury your brother, you can come for us to talk. I mean, you must find a time so we can talk. So the president asked me to go to him. I can't deny going to him. I went to him and we talked.
You were to meet with the Minister of Justice on Monday. How did that meeting go?
The meeting went well. It was not about what was in the communication. It was about bringing peace because our people need peace. I also assured the minister that I am going to be part of the June 7 peaceful demonstration.
When you met with President Weah, did the president talk to you about your statement about the possibility that he, the president, can be removed from office in 3 months? Did the president ask you about that?
We did not talk about anything of such. Like I said, when I got there, we sat down, greeted the president, told him thank you for the audience, thank you for the invite, but I will be prepared to talk when I bury my brother because I'm moving right now. I need to lay my brother to rest.
Did President Weah, did he begin to talk to you about anything?
Well, I mean, when we got there, he started to talk about issue anyway, but I was not in the mood to talk. And he respected me, he respected my right, and said, okay, then after you bury your brother, we can meet and we can talk.
So what issues did the president start to talk about?
He started to talk about national issue, wherein he said to me, Honorable Koluba, I even told the UN chief to meet you. I talked to other people to meet you so we can have audience to talk. And I needed to respect the president. My going there does not suggest that I'm not going to talk about critical national issues. No. I want to make this clear. The president would not stop me from talking about critical national issues because I was elected to talk for the Liberian people. I was elected to advocate for the Liberian people.
There was this concern whether the government might arrest you or not. What did Justice Minister Musa Dean say?
We didn't talk anything about arrest. I said we went there, and the Minister of State were there, the Minister of Finance were there, and other people were there. The Minister was there with all his deputies. The Council of Churches were there. What we talk about was peace. We are preaching peace for our people. but we are going to be very constructive, and we're going to talk about national issues. Our people have decided June 7th we'll have a peaceful protest, and I am going to be a part of that peaceful protest. We are going to go from counties to counties to educate our people on the protest, because we don't want it to go violent. We are not in the interest of anything that brings destruction to the country, but we are in the interest of peace. If by us doing the peaceful protest will make the president proceed the right way, then we will succeed in doing that.
Honorable Koluba, did your meeting with President Weah come after your meeting with the justice minister or before?
Well, my colleague met him yesterday. He told my colleagues that he wanted to have audience with me. So they decided after the justice ministry were coming to go there. And after the justice ministry, the king will start to my office, my district office on the old road, and will pick up from my district office and went. And we met the president. He welcomed us to his house, and we start with talk.
Thank you very much, Honorable Koluba.
Thank you. Again, I want to say before you go, we are calling on this president to please endorse the coming of the war crime court, because we need a war crime court here so our country can be peaceful. I will stand for the war crime court. I will appreciate if the international community can prevail on our president to bring a war crime court so we can go there to exonerate ourselves. Thank you very much.
Yeka Koluba is a member of the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. As we observe World Immunization Week, we are going to focus on a disease that could be eradicated from the earth, just like smallpox was, and just as international programs are doing with polio. But as Carol Pearson reports, this deadly disease is making a comeback.
Measles is a disease that is found only in humans, so it could be completely wiped off the face of the earth, just like smallpox was. But despite a highly effective and safe vaccine, measles is making a comeback. In just the first 3 months of this year, the World Health Organization reports that cases of measles has tripled over last year. In Africa, the situation is worse. Africa saw a 700% increase compared to last year.
Madagascar has almost 1,000 deaths. It has, you know, tens of thousands of infections.
This is Brooklyn, New York, where a measles outbreak among Hasidic Jews prompted the mayor to declare a state of emergency. The National Institutes of Health warns that a decline in measles vaccination is causing a preventable global resurgence of this often deadly disease, including in the U.S. Before the vaccine became available in the 1960s, about 2 million people around the world would die from measles. In the U.S., 3 to 4 million people were infected every year.
1 in 10 children who get infected with measles will get an ear infection that could cause deafness. 1 in 20 would get pneumonia. 1 in 1,000 would get brain swelling, what we call encephalitis. And 1 to 3 per 1,000 would die. So to say that measles is a trivial disease is completely incorrect.
The complications are even worse in poor countries.
You start off with children who are already at greater risk. They may be malnourished. They may have immune system compromise. They may have underweight, and they may have no access to health care. So measles is a big killer.
You have a 90% chance of getting measles if you haven't been vaccinated and you come in contact with someone who has it.
So it's very infectious. And so it will find everybody who is not protected against measles.
The solution is to get 2 doses of the measles vaccine. That may mean educating parents about the disease and the vaccine. Equally important is making vaccination a priority of health systems worldwide. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Earlier this month, the Dutch government placed restrictions on Sea-Watch vessels, and the restrictions are hampering the nonprofit's migrant rescue operations in the Mediterranean, according to Sea-Watch. Heidi Sedik is a spokesperson for the group. She spoke to Ricky Stryak about the current state of operations in the Mediterranean, where governments are no longer carrying out search and rescue missions for migrants.
All the NGOs doing a civil rescue operation now being blocked is all the more outrageous, because it is something that, I mean, it's an age-old law of the sea to render assistance to anyone who's drowning, and to criminalize that is a new low when it comes to migration and policy and border protection.
What kind of basis, because I know some governments such as Italy, their people have been prosecuted because of this. So, you know, what's the status of that?
So far, the people who are accused are accused on the basis of very far-fetched allegations of colluding with smugglers or aiding illegal migration or aiding human trafficking, which is obviously, it's a stretch, right?
Currently, how are things at sea at the moment? I know arrivals, quote unquote, have gone down, but there's obviously a lot of contention as well over sending people back to Libya, where we know it's the most horrendous conditions possible, basically.
Exactly, yeah. And so that's, I mean, it's rock bottom, really, because rescue capacity is at an all-time low. And even though absolute numbers are in decline, the death rate is rising. And it's higher, like it's at a four-year high. So at the height of the crisis, and I say that in quotation marks, because it's a crisis of political will, not of capacity. So Europe and its naval forces have all the capacity in the world to respond to what is happening and to make sure that people do not get lost and die at sea. But that isn't happening. And to make matters even worse, like you said, is that not only do we not rescue people anymore, we actually condone that they're taken back illegally to a place that we know is not safe and where we know they will suffer tremendous human rights abuses.
You mentioned the death rates are higher than they used to be. Can you tell me a little bit about those statistics?
Well, I think it was UNHCR who said that six people died on average each day last year. And so, I mean, the numbers in absolute terms are going down, but it's becoming more and more dangerous for people crossing. And obviously, the smugglers use less and less seaworthy vessels. And like coupled with that, the decrease in rescue capacity by European military vessels and the crackdown on NGOs means that the risk of being lost at sea is higher than ever before. Because there is no one, we don't have eyes and ears in the sea per se. Like, we actually don't know how many boats go missing. And the estimates of the death rate are just estimates because we don't really know. When we hear, you know, there's a distress call. Since last week, last Monday, there was a boat with 50 people that went missing and never been found. Who were those 50 people? Was it 50 or was it 55 or was it 60? We have no idea. And they've never been found. So the death rate still will very likely be much, much higher than we all think.
That was Heidi Sedik, a spokesperson for Sea Watch. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Berlin, Germany. Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa News. Protest leaders in Sudan say they will continue demonstrating in Khartoum, ignoring demands by the country's military rulers for protesters to remove themselves and their blockades from roads. The Sudanese Professional Association, which is leading the protest, said Monday that the group would continue its sit-in until a civilian government takes power. The group called for a march on Tuesday, today, and mass rallies on Thursday. The Monday saw protesters operating checkpoints on roads at their main protest site at Khartoum's military headquarters. Uganda parliamentarian and popular musician Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobby Wine, will deliver a letter today, Tuesday, to the Ugandan police against what he called police brutality. The police canceled Bobby Wine's Easter holiday concerts on Sunday on the grounds that the concert organizers failed to meet public safety and security standards. But Bobby Wine told a news conference yesterday that he had written to the police 3 months ahead of the concert. That is it for this Tuesday, April 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Blended sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee it.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your peek. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.